tithes and tithing. In most churches today, the term tithing is used to refer to the practice of giving 10% of one's income to the church, or as is often said, giving it to God, typically via a weekly church contribution. The relevant Hebrew word is ma'aser, which does literally mean a tenth. I currently live in a Spanish-speaking country, and here they refer to the diezmo, or tenth. Same thing. Tithing was part of the Mosaic Law, laid out in Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, and was a vital part of the economic system of the Jewish temple state. So what exactly was the purpose of tithing within that system? Who did it, and who received the tithes? Was it really 10%, and if so, of what? Did Jesus tithe? Do modern Jews tithe? What about other groups? Should we tithe today? Is it possible to tithe today? And does Old Testament tithing suggest a 10% starting point for our giving? These are some of the questions that will be addressed. Before getting into information that will lead to some answers, I want to pause and ask you to consider how open you are to reevaluating your beliefs in this area. Are you someone who considers it spiritually healthy to periodically study old topics out again in order to revalidate your beliefs and practices, and possibly even to make some adjustments to them? Adjustments could mean changing what you believe and do, or it might just mean recognizing that there's more to the story than you thought before, and that perhaps a little less dogmatism may be appropriate when you teach. If we merely accept what other people have told us, or what seems to make sense and gets the job done, in this case for the funding of church operations and programs, then what we believe and do is at risk of being defined merely by customs and traditions. Jesus went out of his way to warn people about centering their spiritual lives around traditions not rooted in the Word of God. Some of what I'm going to share might make you uncomfortable if you're one who fears that greater freedom and fewer guidelines in this area could lead to less giving. I think we can all admit to giving in at times to end justifies the means thinking. Perhaps you already know that Malachi 3 and the scriptures in Corinthians aren't about raising money for religious institutions, or that we may be laying conjecture on top of assumption in rendering an opinion about before-tax or after-tax giving. But it's all for a good cause, so what's the harm, as long as we don't stray too far and people actually give? After all, it's all for God, right? Here I've tried to allow scripture and the actual history of tithing to guide my conclusions, and to distinguish between things we can know for sure and what's more open to conjecture. Let's be honest, there are fuzzy areas on many subjects. If God asks you to write an instructional document on giving, or on baptism, or even on speaking in tongues, you'd produce something very different than what we find in the Bible. Fewer gaps and all in one place, right? Let's not pretend that all answers are easy and that only a fool could miss them. That's not intellectually honest, and since those who teach will be judged more severely, James 3:1, it's dangerous. But on the subject of tithing, I honestly believe that the biblical record is much clearer than it is on those other subjects. If you disagree with me on any specific point and know of scriptural and or historical evidence that points in another direction, please contact me, and if I need to, I'll re-record this entire podcast. You can reach me via the website www.sheepnotgoats.org. So now on to the topic at hand, tithes and tithing. And by the way, this is a two-part study, so once this podcast is finished, there's still more to come. There will be some overlap with an earlier podcast that I did on priests and Levites. You might want to listen to that as well. Any thorough study of tithing has to begin with the economic system of ancient Israel. In Israel, most wealth was derived from the fruits of the land, this land flowing with milk and honey. Israel was not a nation of conquest like the Assyrians and later Persians, Macedonians, and Romans, who would conquer other nations and exact tribute or taxation from them in exchange for certain protections, and basically for not wiping them off the face of the earth. So agriculture was key. The growing populace needs to eat. Note that all of the temple sacrifices, what the people needed to regularly give up in exchange for forgiveness and God's blessing, were either plant or animal offerings, among them grain, barley, sheep, goats, and bulls. This was the substance of the physical blessings promised by God. Another important aspect was the division of land among Jacob's offspring, the so-called 12 tribes. There were 12 and 12 divisions of land, but Jacob's grandsons, the sons of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh, each received a share, meaning that one of Jacob's sons received nothing. And that was Levi, or Levi's offspring, because by the time the Israelites were about to enter the Promised Land and receive their inheritance, all of Levi's sons, grandsons, and great-grandsons were all dead. So depending on how you look at it, or on which scriptures you consider, there were either 13 tribes or 11 tribes plus two half-tribes. It's perhaps extreme to say that the tribe of Levi received nothing. In fact, they probably saw themselves as the most blessed of all, because they were permanently dedicated to God's service, set apart from the other tribes for work in God's roving tabernacle, and later in the temple. A certain subset of Levites, those descended from Aaron, could be priests. All priests were Levites, but not all Levites were priests. The Levites actually did receive a very small, almost insignificant amount of land on which to raise food. 48 towns within the lands of the other tribes, including about half a kilometer around each city, so they could raise some of their own crops. These towns included the cities of refuge, where someone who accidentally killed someone could hide out, awaiting trial, without fear that a relative of the person they killed would take justice into his own hands against them. But the real source of support for the Levites was the other tribes, and this is where we get to tithing. According to Numbers 18:21, the Levites were to get all of the tithes of Israel. Then the non-priest Levites would tithe from that to support the priests, a so-called tithe of the tithe. In addition to the tithe of the tithe, which came from their Levitic brethren, priests could eat some of the sacrifices, as seldom was the entire offering consumed in the fire. They could even eat the 12 loaves of bread placed on the table inside the holy place, loaves that were replaced every week, perhaps a bit stale after a week sitting there, but still part of God's plan to support them and their families. I'll now read Numbers chapter 18, verses 21 to 24. To the sons of Levi, behold, I have given all the tithe in Israel for an inheritance, in return for their service which they perform, the service of the tent of meeting. The sons of Israel shall not come near the tent of meeting again, or they will bear sin and die. Only the Levites shall perform the service of the tent of meeting, and they shall bear their iniquity. It shall be a perpetual statute throughout your generations, and among the sons of Israel they shall have no inheritance. For the tithe of the sons of Israel, which they offer as an offering to the Lord, I have given to the Levites for an inheritance. Therefore I have said concerning them, they shall have no inheritance among the sons of Israel. Again, the tithes were the Levites' inheritance. And the Levites who were not priests gave a tithe, or tenth, of that to their fellow Levites who were priests. The priests did not tithe at all. They represented the end of the line in this system of tithing. So what were the tithes? They included produce from the fields, fruit, olive oil, and new wine, as well as every tenth animal. Let's read some passages that describe what the tithe was. Most focus on plant products, but some mention animals as well. Leviticus 27:30-31. Thus all the tithe of the land, of the seed of the land, or of the fruit of the tree, is the Lord's. It is holy to the Lord. If therefore a man wishes to redeem part of his tithe, he shall add to it one-fifth of it. For every tenth part of herd or flock, whatever passes under the rod, the tenth one shall be holy to the Lord. Deuteronomy 14:22-23. You shall surely tithe all the produce from what you sow, which comes out of the field every year. You shall eat in the presence of the Lord your God at the place where he chooses to establish his name. The tithe of your grain, your new wine, your oil, and the firstborn of your herd and your flock, so that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. The firstborn of your herd and your flock is separate from animals associated with the tithe. More on that a bit later. The next passage is Deuteronomy 14, verse 28. At the end of every third year, you shall bring out all the tithe of your produce in that year, and shall deposit it in your town. 2 Chronicles 31:5-6. As soon as the order spread, the sons of Israel provided in abundance the first fruits of grain, new wine, oil, honey, and of all the produce of the field, and they brought in abundantly the tithe of all. The sons of Israel and Judah who lived in the cities of Judah also brought in the tithe of oxen and sheep, and the tithe of sacred gifts which were consecrated to the Lord their God, and placed them in heaps. Nehemiah 13:12. All Judah then brought the tithe of the grain, wine, and oil into the storehouses. Malachi 3:8-10. Will a man rob God? Yet you are robbing me. But you say, how have we robbed you? In tithes and offerings. You are cursed with a curse, for you are robbing me, the whole nation of you. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, so that there may be food in my house, and test me now in this, says the Lord of hosts. The passage that I just read from Malachi mentions neither plants nor animals, but the call to bring the tithe into a storehouse with the purpose of ensuring a food supply makes it quite clear that money was not involved. So my first main point is this. Tithing was never about cash money. It was about providing food for the Levites. So any argument that one is required to implement literal biblical tithing today must be based on an argument that A, the concept applies to money and not just farm products as in the Bible, and B, that the use of the tithes for the physical sustenance of the tribe of Levi is somehow parallel to what church contributions are used for today, which of course includes building and rental expenses, missionary support, and staff salaries well beyond the mere level of sustenance. Jewish people today do not tithe, and their scholars are quick to point out that it's not possible to tithe because there are no Levites and there's no temple. They have other means of securing money from their people, but they seem to steer clear of even suggesting that people tithe because that was something from another time and another economy, and they don't want to redefine biblical terms to mean new things that they didn't mean in the scriptures. Are we okay with doing that? There are only 5 New Testament scriptures that mention tithing. 2 of them are alternate versions of the same story from the Gospels. Let's take a look at Matthew 23:23. Jesus said, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint and dill and cumin, and have neglected the weightier provisions of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness. But these are the things you should have done without neglecting the others." Jesus criticized the Pharisees for tithing mint, dill, and cumin, all herbs or spices, yet ignoring things even more important to God. Pay careful attention to his words. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. Jesus' emphasis and his entire point was about what the Pharisees failed to do. Jesus specifically confirmed that they needed to tithe from their produce, even these seemingly insignificant items. That was simply their duty within the Old Covenant system under which Jesus and the Pharisees lived. Jesus reinforced this. So, under the Old Testament system, who tithed? The answer is fairly simple. Anyone who produced crops, fruit, oil, or animals. These would typically be landowners, but there's no reason one couldn't do this on rented land. Did the hired workers of the farm owner tithe? No, they did not. Did artisans baking bread or making ox carts tithe? No, they did not. Did priests tithe? They are the Levites who received 1/10 of what was given to their fellow non-priest Levites, the tithe of the tithe. The priests did not tithe to anyone. They were the end of the line. Did Jesus' father, Joseph, tithe, as he was a carpenter, according to Matthew 13:55? No, he wouldn't have. Finally, did Jesus tithe? No, he did not. This system where only part of the population contributed may seem unfair to our modern minds, but don't we read, even in the New Testament, there are different gifts and roles within the church? We can't automatically assume that anything done by or suggested to anyone in the Bible automatically applies equally to every other person. The tithing system demonstrates a more intricate plan that, for all we know, worked just fine. Let's consider the math. The Levites were one of 13 tribes that were part of this economic equation. The 12 with land plus themselves. If each of the 12 produced the same amount of plant produce and animals, the Levites would have 120% of what each of the 12 started out with before giving their tithe, while each of the 12 tribes would have 90%. This math is horribly rough. For one thing, the tribes were not all the same size. But from this rough first pass, just perhaps, we can agree that the model would be sufficient to sustain the Levites. So if it's even close, where is the argument for additional tithing of cash from artisans, hired farm workers, and carpenters? There was simply no need for that, and there's absolutely no evidence in the Bible that it ever took place. Now let's move beyond who tithed and what was tithed to what the non-Levite tithers were called to do with their tithes, because for the most part it was anything but handing it over to a religious official. I've always been intrigued by what's written in the book of Deuteronomy about tithing, specifically chapters 12, 14, and 26. Let's inspect some relevant passages. Deuteronomy 12, 10 to 19 includes the following. You will cross the Jordan and settle in the land the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance, and he will give you rest from all your enemies around you so that you will live in safety. Then to the place the Lord your God will choose as a dwelling for his name, there you are to bring everything I command you, your burnt offerings and sacrifices, your tithes and special gifts, and all the choice possessions you have vowed to the Lord. And there rejoice before the Lord your God, you, your sons and daughters, your male and female servants, and the Levites from your towns who have no allotment or inheritance of their own. Be careful not to sacrifice your burnt offerings anywhere you please. Offer them only at the place the Lord will choose in one of your tribes, and there observe everything I command you. Here the people were reminded that the Levites have no inheritance of their own, and were told to bring their tithes to the place the Lord your God will choose as a dwelling for his name. Ultimately, Jerusalem, the site of the future Jewish temple. It says, there they will rejoice before the Lord. Let's read on. You must not eat in your own towns the tithe of your grain and new wine and olive oil, or the firstborn of your herds and flocks, or whatever you have vowed to give, or your freewill offerings or special gifts. Instead, you are to eat them in the presence of the Lord your God at the place the Lord your God will choose. You, your sons and daughters, your male and female servants, and the Levites from your towns, and you are to rejoice before the Lord your God in everything you put your hand to. Be careful not to neglect the Levites as long as you live in your land. Hold on a minute. The people who tithed were supposed to take the tithes to Jerusalem and eat them there? Doesn't that subtract from the 10% standard of sacrifice? We should take note that this rejoicing before the Lord was to include servants as well as the Levites from their towns. In fact, the reminder to see to the Levites' needs was given twice here. There's more information two chapters ahead in Deuteronomy 14, 22 to 29. Be sure to set aside a tenth of all that your fields produce each year. Eat the tithe of your grain, new wine, and olive oil, and the firstborn of your herds and flocks in the presence of the Lord your God at the place he will choose as a dwelling for his name, so that you may learn to revere the Lord your God always. But if that place is too distant, and you have been blessed by the Lord your God and cannot carry your tithe, because the place where the Lord will choose to put his name is so far away, then exchange your tithe for silver, and take the silver with you, and go to the place the Lord your God will choose. Use the silver to buy whatever you like, cattle, sheep, wine, or other fermented drink, or anything you wish. Then you and your household shall eat there in the presence of the Lord your God and rejoice. And do not neglect the Levites living in your towns, for they have no allotment or inheritance of their own. They were to hold a great, generous party, including wine or other fermented drink, as a means of acknowledging and celebrating God's generosity to them. And again, he says, don't neglect the Levites. Let's continue with the next verses. At the end of every 3 years, bring all the tithes of that year's produce and store it in your towns, so that the Levites, who have no allotment or inheritance of their own, and the foreigners, the fatherless, and the widows who live in your towns, may come and eat and be satisfied, and so that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. Okay, so here's a twist. The Israelites were not to do the exact same thing every year. Every 3 years, they are to store the tithes, note all the tithes, from that year locally for the Levites, foreigners, orphans, and widows. So 1 out of 3 years, at least according to this, the tither didn't get to plan and enjoy the grand celebratory meal, but instead stored things up for others. So we conclude that every 3 years, they really did sacrifice a full tenth of their bounty. Let's take a look now at a third passage, Deuteronomy chapter 26. When you have finished setting aside a tenth of all your produce in the third year, the year of the tithe, you shall give it to the Levite, the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow, so that they may eat in your towns and be satisfied. Then say to the Lord your God, I have removed from my house the sacred portion, and have given it to the Levite, the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow, according to all you commanded. I have not turned aside from your commands, nor have I forgotten any of them. Here, the every third year for storing the tithes locally for the Levites and destitute is called the year of the tithe. Now let's attempt to do some rough math on all of this. 10% of crops, wine, animals, etc. is carried to the place that God decides 2 out of 3 years and consumed there by the family along with the other mentioned recipients. Let's assume generously, I think, that the family itself consumes only 50%. That's after the shares for priests who make some sacrifices and portions given to non-family members like the Levites and poor. So for that year, half of the tithe is given to others, half of the tenth, or 5%, of the total yield from crops, fruit trees, animals, etc. back home. That's in years 1 and 2, but in year 3, all of the tithe goes into local storehouses for the Levites and needy. So averaging 5% and 5% and 10%, we get an average outlay of 6 2/3% per year. And please don't forget that many people were not required to tithe at all. Some might ask why I haven't considered the sabbatical year, every seventh year when the Jews were not to harvest anything from their fields and there would be no tithing. I ignored that because God promised to bless the Jews with twice the harvest in the sixth year, the year just before the sabbatical year. So a tithe of 10% would mean setting aside an extra year's worth, so it all works out. But we do have to adjust our math a little, since the sixth year was one of those when all of the tithe would be placed into a local storehouse for the Levites and the poor. So the effective tithe covering years 6 and 7 would be a total sacrifice for the tither, since none of it would be carried to Jerusalem for a celebration. We now have to average 5% for years 1, 2, 4, and 5, with 10% for year 3, 20% due to twice the harvest in year 6, and 0% for year 7. That averages out to 7.14% of all farm production over a 7-year period. I'm not arguing that anyone should give 7.14%, any more than I'd argue that they must give 10%, 30%, or any other amount. There's no formula for New Testament giving, as Paul wrote about a slightly different type of giving. Each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion. However, I do argue that if we want to recommend that people tithe, or if we claim that we do it ourselves, we should have our facts straight and avoid demonstrating ignorance of the scriptures. Once one understands the Old Testament system, it's hard to consider anyone who advocates biblical tithing as much of a Berean when it comes to this subject. And if not here, then what's their depth on other matters they teach about? I'm not saying that everyone needs to be knowledgeable in this area, but we should be knowledgeable in any subject about which we teach or admonish other people. I'll recap this a bit in the beginning of part 2, the second podcast, as well as take on some specific questions about tithing. But let's tackle one here as we close out, since I already touched upon it briefly. And that question is, do modern Jews tithe? One might find this to be an interesting and relevant question, because if any group might be motivated to hang on to a practice mandated in what we call the Old Testament, in this case from their Torah, it would be modern Jews. So I did some research, and the most common view that I came across is that it would be wrong and indeed a sin to tithe, since the Mosaic law mandates that tithes be paid only to the Levites who are dedicated to God's service. Yet there is no temple today, and those who are said to be descended from Levi have no special responsibilities. It seems that synagogue operations are mostly funded through either an annual membership fee or through payment for a certain seat in the synagogue. The better the seat, the higher the cost. I also saw evidence that in some cases a periodic, mostly monthly, contribution is taken, but that it goes to charity, not to synagogue operations. Orthodox Jews commonly practice Maaser Kesefim, the donation of 10% to 20% of their income to charity, although this can include giving to family, such things as paying for college expenses or medical needs for parents. So even those with possibly the strongest motivation to hold to what Christians call Old Covenant practices don't even make the attempt or believe that it. I hope you'll tune in for the second part of this study on tithing. Goodbye.